Hello. Welcome.
It's Talk Murdy to Me.
We're back after a one-week hiatus.
Ooh.
Fun in the sun. The last splash for our girl, Jessie.
Woo. It was the best weekend. Y'all, I am middle-aged.
Yeah, we all are. But you were the most middle-aged.
But I was clearly 8 months older than everybody there.
It was terrible.
Because I got sunburned.
Yeah, but then after she got sunburned, she slept wrong and then apparently couldn't do anything else.
I tried to sleep on my stomach to avoid aggravating the sunburn and then managed to semi-throw my back out from sleeping incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that small setback, though, if you guys need a bachelorette planned in Pacific Beach / Carlsbad / Temecula, California, you need to hit up Sarah immediately. Her and her BFF Leah planned a weekend of dreams.
Yeah,
it was
epic.
The perfect weekend. So, Well done you.
Woohoo!
But yeah, it feels like it's been 2 weeks since we sat down.
Yeah.
And I don't even know the last time we recorded here in the kitchen. Because the last time we did it was at your mom's house.
Yeah. And then you definitely could hear me moving even though I was on a bed.
Yeah, well.
I thought I was invincible.
You did a good job. You really tried.
I thought, nobody can hear this. They could.
But that microphone, yeah. It does its job.
Picked up everything, so. Do you have anything? You usually have like a list.
I don't have a real list or anything today. I did see something on the Instagram that I really enjoyed.
Okay,
and
tell.
I thought I'd share. So I saw this thing posted on an account on Instagram called I Am 30 AF.
Okay.
Which I was like, yep. It says it's sorely missed Victorian slang. Have you seen this at all?
No.
Okay. There is a couple that I just really loved. I'm not going to read all of them. There's 8.
You could post it on the story.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that. My favorite one, though, was it's a slang for temporary sadness, and it's got the morbs.
Morbs? Yeah. Like morbid?
I think so. But it's just got the morbs, and it means, like, you're sad today.
You're just, like, bummed.
Yeah.
You're just not yourself.
Yeah, and yeah. I thought we could bring that back.
We could try.
Yeah, there is also one, I guess, pour the tea, but I think it means, like, actual Victorian tea, not, like, gossip tea.
Oh.
But it's called to bitch the pot.
I don't know if these are real.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought. I know giggle mug. I do know that means smiling.
What?
Like, someone who always is smiling. They have a giggle mug.
Not me.
No. Sarah does not have a giggle mug.
No. But once you know me, I do.
Yeah, you really open up. But yeah, I just really enjoyed the got the morbs. Yeah. I think we should bring that into our everyday jargon.
I had the morbs a few times on this trip because of you, Melissa.
Me?
Yeah. There was multiple times I had to look at you and say, I'm not pleased with you right now.
You said that because I kept saying at red lights, I kept going, it's green, and you see I'm freaking out.
It wasn't funny. And you're not supposed to mess with a driver. Everybody will attest to that.
But one of them, you were looking at the red light.
But when somebody tells you green, then you see green.
Oh, it was great.
Don't you know anything?
No, never. None.
No. Okay.
I think that's it. I don't really... Sorry, guys, if you were hoping for a lot of small talk.
No, I haven't talked to anybody today.
Ooh.
That's why when you called, I was like a dead person.
You were very uncomfortable on the phone. You went, hi, and what... Or no, you said, what do you... What? And I was like, hi, how's it going? You said, I'm just leaving. And I said, okay. And I said... Because Sarah has some cookies from Crumble that her mom froze for me a couple weeks ago, and I keep forgetting to bring them home.
I didn't know what you meant.
The elusive Kentucky butter cake. And I said, oh, well, if you want to bring those cookies, that'd be cool. And Sarah goes, I already locked the door. I'm not going back in and setting the alarm. No. And then she realized what I meant. She thought I was just asking her to bring me some other cookies.
No, we just had cookies made.
Yeah.
For the bachelorette party. I thought she wanted me to bring the other cookies. And first of all, it's like, that's rude. What if these are my cookies?
I wouldn't have expected them to be any left. Like, that's why I didn't even think about those.
No. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
I changed my tune. I got a Coca-Cola in my system, and
yeah,
Melissa actually got us some chippers.
Yeah, yeah.
So, now it's time.
It's a picnic.
So, here's some chatty chat chat for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, rock, paper, scissors. I don't know if you know, but I've been having a winning streak.
I think you have been.
It just got messed up because we hadn't played. rock, paper, scissors.
I didn't know what you were going to say.
Because I lost. It got messed up.
That's what I thought you were going to say. I'm like, that is how those mess up.
No, because we had two single episodes.
Mm, you know? Right, right.
Okay, ready?
I think so.
Rock, paper, scissors. Oh, man, I jinxed myself.
Big win. Big win, Mel. Ugh. Hated that. Only I get to call myself Mel from time to time. Nobody else.
Melissa's like, there are no nicknames for Melissa.
Yeah.
And I was like, Mel.
Well, we were talking about baby names, and you were making fun of me because for every baby name I threw out, I was like, this is what I'd name it, but this is what we'd call it. And you were like, why are you thinking about baby names needing a nickname?
Yeah.
And I was like, because I have a name that doesn't have a nickname, and it's kind of a drag sometimes because people can only call me by my last name. And you tried to throw out Mel as a nickname, and I shut that shit down.
But I also don't have a name with a nickname. But the name I would choose, I've just decided I'd just go with the nickname.
As your own nickname?
No. Like if I had a child and named it.
Oh.
Like, never mind.
All right.
I just don't understand. Never mind. Why give a kid a name and not call it that name?
She's got the morbs.
I got the morbs. Okay, I'm ready to listen.
All right. Today we're going to go to a state that I don't think we've been to in a while for stories.
Missouri.
No.
New Hampshire.
Stop guessing.
No. Montana.
I'm going to give you a hint.
What does it start with?
Well, the state is Iowa. It's in the heartland.
Tennessee?
I've been multiple times. I don't know if you've ever been. They worship cheese in this state.
Oh.
We hate their NFL team. Yep. Wisconsin. You
know, then I recently saw this video of this little girl super excited to see that Aaron Rodgers and he did it. And it was kind of cute.
But she was cute.
But then I was like, oh.
Yeah. She was the star of that video.
Oh, no. He actually had a good smile.
Oh, put it away.
But he's done long hair.
Remember last summer when me and Mom drove to Michigan and home?
Mm-hmm.
On our way home, we ended up being an actual extra day late getting home because we physically couldn't stop ourselves from stopping at every single cheese stand or, like, cheese farm.
They stopped bringing up cheese.
Coming through Wisconsin. We stopped at every one of them.
I've decided I'm lactose intolerant.
Ooh, tough day.
So Melissa's throwing cheese in front of my face. That's not cool, dude.
All right, well, you ready?
Now I am.
Okay. We're going to go back to just after 2 a.m. on May 28th, 1981.
It's my cousin's birthday.
Our cousin? Mm-hmm. I knew that.
Do you know which one?
Yeah, we only have one cousin born in May. Two cousins born in May.
We have two?
Wait, I'm thinking of Gussie and James. Aren't they both born in May?
Yeah, that's correct.
You were only thinking of Gussie. You forgot about James.
No. James's birthday is the 28th, you idiot. I forgot about Gus.
Oh, man. I won't tell him.
I don't consider him a cousin.
He's like a nephew.
Yeah.
He's a prince.
Well.
Okay. James's birthday, 1981.
He wasn't born yet.
10 years before he was born, right?
Yeah.
To the day?
Probably.
Whoa. Well, this part of the story is like 100% the worst case scenario for like when you hear a bump in the night, like what you start picturing in your head. A 12-year-old boy is startled awake and he sees a hooded figure standing over him trying to wrap something around his neck. We agree it's just the worst.
Mm.
Yeah, fucking horrifying. He screams, scared as shit.
Yeah.
Actually, the attacker runs out of the room because it startles the attacker as well.
Good.
Yeah. Just a few seconds later, the boy and his younger brother both hear a loud noise coming from their mother's bedroom. They lived with their mom alone. And this 12-year-old, so brave, heads down the hallway to his mom's room after going through what he had already been through. As he's heading to her room, he sees a glimpse of the attacker running away, like down the stairs from his mom's room. And he sees a little bit more detail this time because it's not as dark in the hallway. And he sees a man with reddish brown hair. It's like up in like a ponytail. He's wearing like a green jacket, black shoes, and he's running away, running out of the house.
Does he have glasses on?
Not that was reported.
Okay, good. I have reddish brown hair and glasses.
Yeah.
I don't have a green shirt on.
What would you do if I was like, they had a gray skirt or a gray shirt on with skeletons skateboarding and a singlet underneath, like they were about to go to wrestling camp?
I would say, am I the murderer?
Is it me?
But this is not something to laugh about.
Yeah, Lisa. No, it's really not.
Get your shit together.
Well, the boy sees this man running away. He runs into his mom's room. He finds her on the bed. She's laying on the stomach with her hands tied up in front of her. And you hate the word, but she's essentially gurgling. She's trying to breathe. He calls 911, and within minutes, the police are inside the house, but they're too late, and they find 30-year-old Christine Schultz is dead at the scene. Very upsetting.
I prefer you never to use the word gurgling again.
I know, but...
You could have said gasping.
Okay. Christine was found with her hands loosely bound in front of her. She had been gagged, and she had been shot once in the back. The medical examiner later would confirm that the bullet had actually gone through Christine's heart.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. More and more police arrive on the scene because this victim wasn't just, like, a regular citizen. She was also the ex-wife of one of their own, Detective Fred Schultz. So they call Fred, who was on duty. He's essentially devastated when he was told what happened. He immediately goes into, like, dad mode to get his kids with him. He also calls his new wife, who was a 21-year-old woman named Lori Bembenek.
There's more than one child in the home?
Yeah, there's a 12-year-old and I believe an 8-year-old.
Okay.
The 12-year-old is who woke up
and
then went to his mom's room. Now, Fred's new wife, Lori Bembenek, was kind of persona non grata to Milwaukee Police Department.
I'm sorry, what? What does that mean?
Persona non grata?
Yeah.
It means someone who's, like, not welcome, not looked favorably upon, not in good standing. You've never heard that phrase?
Melissa.
I think it's Latin.
It 100% is Latin.
Maybe it's Italiano. Somebody check that and let me know. Yeah, it's just like a phrase. You want to say it out loud?
No, I would have just said, like, they didn't like her.
So persona non grata?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to be nice.
Yeah, well, it was. Well, Lori was actually a former police officer for Milwaukee PD. She had been fired a few years before, and after she was fired, she had actually tried to sue the department for sexual discrimination and other illegal activities.
She was only 21?
Yeah, so whenever this went down, she was, I'm pretty sure, a teenager.
How? How do you become a police officer when you're a teen?
It's 1981.
Don't you have to go to high school?
Well, yeah, but most people finish high school when they're 17 or 18.
I think most people 18.
Okay, well then maybe she went right into the academy. Maybe she was a go-getter. Betty Kay.
Yeah, she's a persona non grata.
At this point.
Yeah.
So after, obviously, when she tried to sue the police department, like, that didn't sit well with most of the department. So even though Fred married her, people didn't really love Lori. But they were very concerned about Christine being the ex-wife of an officer, obviously, that hit home for them. Lori was at home asleep when Fred called her and said that he was basically inconsolable. He was telling her that Christine had been murdered, that his boys had been in the house during the crime. And police go all out and they begin a manhunt immediately, looking for suspects that match the boys' description of the intruder.
Mm-hmm. But nothing had ever happened to the other child.
Right.
And the other boy had woken up in enough time to scare away the murderer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't read anything about the younger brother, if anything had been done, but from what it seems like, is it seems like the person who broke in maybe was trying to kill the boys.
Yeah.
And then was going to kill her. I don't know. It's just awful. Police originally think, like, okay, this had to have been a burglary gone wrong. Okay. You know, it doesn't make sense for crime like this to just happen where they're from. So they start to process the scene, but then they start to find that there's no sign of forced entry and that with Christine being the ex-wife of a police officer would always lock the door.
Yeah.
Like zero chance that she would forget. The boys also confirmed, like, nope, we do that every night. And their suspicions, like, start to raise. And of course, like, the ex or the current, you know, partner is always the first suspect. But in this case, their first suspect is also one of them. So it's a little bit tricky. But they go to Fred Schultz. They ask him for his alibi for the time of the murder. They confirmed it. And he was on duty. And his partner was able to account for literally his whereabouts during the entire window of the crime. So everyone's like, whew, like, good.
Goodness.
Nothing sketchy there. We don't need to be worried. but they want to be very sure of everything. So they actually take his service weapon. They also ask him for his personal weapon that he keeps at home, which was a .38 revolver. He kept it at home in a safe while he was off duty. His personal weapon that he kept at home did, I guess, match the type of weapon that was used in the homicide. So the police do take that into evidence, and they decide they want to run forensics on it. And he's like, cool, of course. Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you need.
A little suspicious, but...
Yeah. More like a coinkydink at that point.
Okay.
Now, the police put together pretty quickly that because Fred was on duty, the only person who would have had access to his revolver was his new wife, Lori, who, as a former police officer, would also know how to handle a weapon.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, and Lori, unfortunately, like, again, it's 1981, couldn't produce any hard alibi. She was home alone. She said she had read for a while before bed, and then she had gone to sleep all by herself. Fred and Lori had only been married for 5 months, and Fred shared custody with his ex-wife, Christine, and they had a very amicable co-parenting relationship. They had a really good schedule. They were always friendly with each other. And Fred even had a spare key to Christine's house that he kept at home in a jewelry box in case of emergencies. Police couldn't help but put together that if Lori wanted to, she could have easily taken her husband's personal weapon and the key to his ex-wife's house, let herself in without anyone having to know,
yeah,
and commit this crime. But as we know, having the opportunity to commit a crime doesn't necessarily mean that someone is actually guilty. They needed to find a motive, and the obvious one is the one that's always the obvious one: money. Fred was paying half of his paycheck right back to Christine. She didn't have the money to pay for the house or the kids' expenses all on her own, so Fred paid a good chunk in alimony every month. I'm pretty sure Christine had sole custody, and then Fred maybe saw them on the weekends. Police were thinking that Lori was a young woman. She was beautiful. They start putting together this idea that maybe she wanted to live a richer lifestyle and resented Christine for, quote, taking half of their money.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. And
they have 2 children.
Right. Well, an issue, though, like having Lori as a suspect, was that her own stepsons, who knew her well, they were her stepsons, had supposedly gotten a look at the attacker, and they maintained that it was a man with dark reddish-brown hair, and Lori was a slim, blonde-haired woman who didn't fit that description at all. And lo and behold, as things kind of start to dry up, there's nothing really coming up in the investigation. Right after the murder, some tenants that lived in the same apartment building as Lori and Fred start to complain about plumbing issues.
Oh, no.
When a plumber showed up, they found something unusual clogging the pipes.
Oh, no, hair.
Someone had tried to flush a reddish-brown wig.
I was just thinking about a wig.
Yep. So police at this point are like, okay, Lori could have bought the wig, put it on, jogged the 2 miles to Christine's house, kind of stayed out of sight. As soon as I wrote that, I was like, Sarah would never be a suspect in this murder.
Sarah, I'm going to casually, briskly walk, because I'm going to be brisk. It's going to be casual.
But they think she could have basically jogged the 2 miles to Christine's house, committed the murder, and then run home the same 2 miles, and then she would have tried to flush the wig down the toilet.
First of all, stupid.
Right. Terrible plan.
We all know you don't flush anything down the toilet.
You really shouldn't.
Just toilet paper.
And your business.
Well, Melissa, we didn't have to say that out loud. We learned it from the Jersey Shore.
I never watched that show, so.
Well, you missed out. There was a really bad toilet clogging, and it was somebody's white t-shirt.
Someone tried to flush a t-shirt? Not
like
surprised.
Like a tank top.
Not surprised.
You can't say what we called it growing up, because it's not appropriate anymore.
Not anymore.
And WB.
Thank you. Ew, I think back, like, we had a phase in basketball where that's what we wore in between games.
Gross. I think everybody did.
I know, but, like, ew.
I saw this TikTok where this girl was like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. I just found these boys' ribbed tank tops.
Shut the fuck up.
And I think if I get, like, a large, it'll be, like, the perfect size, like, mid or crop top. And she's like, can you believe it? And this, like, person our age is like, I have no words.
I can't help you. Yeah, with that.
Like, she was just like, I'm concerned that this is what I'm seeing on the TikTok because this was our life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, not good.
So.
Well, bless her heart.
Yeah. So she tried to.
They think she might have tried to flush a wig.
Flush a wig.
Yeah. Now, while all of this investigating is going on, forensics is still testing Fred's personal weapon that they had collected after the murder. Eventually, the lab confirms that Fred's personal weapon was the murder weapon.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And on June 24th, 1981, police arrest Lori Bembenek with the first-degree murder of Christine Schultz.
So they never thought it was the husband because he was he had somebody with him.
Yeah. Also, he never, like, basically, I think, made comments to people about how mad he was. He seemed to genuinely have a good relationship with his ex-wife.
Yeah, sounds like it. If she trusts him enough to have a key and different things like that, doesn't look like it was a...
Yeah, there was just never any motive that came about of, like, he would be better off without her. And also the fact that this person attempted to hurt his son as well.
Yeah.
They were like, that doesn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. At this point, the media are, like, picking up the story like wildfire because it's the wife of an active detective. She was a former police officer.
Who tried to sue the police.
Yeah, and she tried to murder, and then basically, if it's correct, murdered his first wife. That's a freaking story, just like all on its own.
Yeah.
Well, as they start to dig more into Lori's background, they find something super juicy. Well, it's like kind of juicy, but they make it super juicy.
Yeah.
After being fired from the police force, but before getting married to Detective Fred, Lori actually had spent a little bit of time working at a Playboy club.
Oh my god, I thought you were telling me in jail.
Oh no. She had actually just worked at this Playboy club for... Did I say that weird? Playboy club?
Yeah, but I think everybody got it.
She'd worked there as a waitress. Just a waitress.
Like, did she wear an outfit with bunny rabbit ears?
I think she had, like, the cocktail. I'm assuming they wore the same outfit with the bunny and everything, but she was never an actual bunny. She never did spreads or like pictures or anything like that. And again, she'd worked there for less than a month. But like shockingly, the media didn't do like a ton of like fact checking or they just didn't care.
What?
Yeah, I know. Weird. And they started printing headlines. Yikes. Sick. Oh, I hated that.
Headlines.
They started printing headlines that were things like, Playboy bunny arrested for murder. Mm-hmm. And of course, that just got the people going wild.
Yeah.
During the trial, as it starts, half of the reporting was on the actual case and trial that was happening. And the other half was basically just like a fashion piece where they detailed everything about her. They talked about her clothes, how she was wearing her hair, her nail polish color.
They were that obsessed?
Yeah. Like people became highly obsessed with this woman because it just seemed impossible. And they thought of her as like a Playboy bunny.
Yeah.
Who was a cop committing murder. It was all the vivacious and... No, salacious. That's the word I'm looking for.
Vivacious.
Dude, I need to go to bed.
You need to go to school. You know, I saw a bunny rabbit in my yard this week.
Oh, cute. What color?
It was like a wild bunny. It wasn't like a bunny that belongs in a home.
Oh. My dad gets a lot of those wild bunnies over at his house, but they eat right out of his hand.
No, your dad has... That neighborhood has bunnies that should be inside going wild and procreating. This was like a bunny you would see on the mountain. Mm. Like a real bunny. Not a home bunny.
I saw, I think, a jackrabbit on the road when we were driving when I was driving to New Mexico the other night. It was a big bunny.
This wasn't. This was just a cute little cocktail.
See, you keep saying things different. You're saying it doesn't belong in a cage, but now you're saying your bunny was cute.
It was. It was like the cute ones you see up by Aunt Nancy's house in the mountain area.
How are those different from what my dad has in his yard?
The ones your dad has in your is somebody let their bunny go, and they have created a colony of bunnies.
But what you're telling me is that's a different looking bunny than a cottontail.
Your dad's bunny is like...
First, you need to bring it down, dude.
Your dad's bunnies are like ones you buy from pet stores. This was clearly one that was born wildly.
But I'm saying you can tell the difference by looking at them?
Yeah, because I have had a lot of dealings with bunnies.
I think I'm just going to Google it later.
Let me show you.
Oh, I don't think that was the time.
Okay. Okay. I won't show you.
Okay, I want to see it, but the people, it'll just feel like we get right there. Update for everybody. Sarah has shown me pictures of identical bodies.
They're not identical. They're not 100% identical at all.
I can't tell the difference.
You guys, just think about a bunny you would see in the wild versus a domestic rabbit that you would buy at a pet store.
Okay. I'm just going to take this as you know more about it than me.
I do. I house sit for bunnies.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
My cousin had a bunch.
Well, let's get back to the Playboy bunny.
Yeah.
But who wasn't really a Playboy bunny?
No.
I think when she was actually arrested, she was working for like a university's like security department.
Sounds like she's the job hopper.
Yeah. Speaking of bunnies.
Oh my God. I didn't mean to do that.
Well, never mind. yeah, she was working for like a campus security. And when she actually was arraigned for her first time ever going to jail and where there was going to be press, she wore her security uniform.
Like purposefully?
Yeah, I think her team was like, we need the people to see that you try to keep people safe, not like murder people.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. I saw a picture of it. I didn't use it as one of mine because I have like multiple pictures already, but you can look it up, guys. This is a really famous case. If you can't pick that up, this is one of the big ones of the 80s. 1980s viral, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, the prosecution during this whole trial really hammered the fact that Lori was the only one who could have had access to what the lab has confirmed is the murder weapon at the time of the murder. They also find a woman who was Lori's former roommate and good friend, and she testified that she had heard on multiple occasions Lori make the comment about wanting to hire someone to, quote, blow Christine away because she hated the alimony payments that her husband had to make.
Well, get over it. Go find a different job. Make your own money, bitch. Sorry. Take that back. I just think that's so rude because it's obviously for the children.
Yeah.
And you married him knowing he had children. It's not like he had
a secret family.
Yeah, like they're 8 and 12, you yeah. said? Those aren't new kids.
Yeah.
Those are middle age. I was going to say, they weren't fresh kids. They were...
Well, this girl's up there testifying. Lori decides that she's not about to take that lying down.
Uh-oh.
She makes the decision to testify on her own behalf.
It's always bad.
She spends 5 hours basically challenging every statement that the prosecution had made about the case and her, like, supposed motive that she had for everything. And even though she gives good information and it is all circumstantial, like evidence they're trying to pin on her, the main thing that people take away from her testimony is her attitude. And she appeared very cold, very emotionless, and it just didn't do her any favors with the jury or the public for that matter. And the prosecution even called Christine Schultz's sons to the stand, and the 12-year-old tells, like, this heartbreaking story of how his mother died in his arms. Like,
yeah.
He's so specific. He's telling everything about what happened, and eventually both he and his younger brother testify that the attacker they saw 100% was not their stepmother.
Yeah, they can't see you differently.
Yeah, they're just like, no, we know her. It wasn't her. And after 2 weeks of testimony, the jury goes into deliberation, and they end up finding, oh, her real name was Lorencia. Isn't that interesting? Her dad must have been named Lawrence.
Do you think?
Why else would someone name someone Lorencia?
I don't know why you're going to name your children names and then change their names.
Okay, but her name is spelled Lawrencia.
You're right. That does sound like Lawrence.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean her dad was. Could have been a grandpa.
Good call. They don't name her Lorencia. Her parents did that. But they find Lorencia Bembenek guilty of first-degree murder. The judge sentences Lori to life in prison.
Dang.
Big sentence. And at this point in time, the public completely split.
Yeah.
Like 100% divided. Half of them think she's super guilty. They're glad she got life. They're glad she got caught. The other half is outraged that this woman was given life in prison for a completely circumstantial case. People are like,
yeah,
that's a really big sentence for having no actual proof when her own stepchildren were there and are saying it wasn't her.
Mm-hmm.
So people were pretty divided on this issue. Lori would begin her life sentence at it's called Tachita Correctional Facility.
Hmm.
It was a maximum security prison.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. During the investigation and the trial as well, Detective Fred Schultz had stood by his second wife and defended her whenever he could. He believed that she was innocent. You know, he believed his children. Mm-hmm. And so when she actually was found guilty, there's like photos of him like openly weeping in court. Like,
that's gotta be hard.
Yeah. I feel really bad for him. But after she had been in prison for about 3 months, he changed his tune. And he said that he now believed that she's guilty, and he moved to Florida with his kids and a new 18-year-old girlfriend.
Frank.
We don't love that.
What's going on, Frank?
Yeah.
Because that means the girlfriend's only 4 years older than your son. Oh, wait, he was 12?
Yeah, about then. I don't know how long it was. Yeah, 5, 6 years older. It's weird.
They have more in common.
Yeah.
They're going to play Pokemon together.
Yeah, would have been coming up on the 90s. It's safe to say that their relationship didn't survive that.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, Lori's in prison. She continues to say that she's innocent. She will not give in on that. And then eventually something ridiculous kind of happens.
Oh, no.
After Lori's in prison, the state's star witness, Lori's former friend and roommate, who had testified that she heard Lori saying she wanted to pay someone to blow away Christine,
mm-hmm.
this woman comes out and goes, ooh, actually, I lied about all of that.
On the stand?
Yep. She says that the police coerced her into giving that statement and that basically they told her to lie and that she just feels so guilty about it. So she's being honest now.
She could be held in contempt.
Yeah, well, after kind of coming out with that, Lori obviously hears about that, and she's like, are you kidding me? Like, that's not cool. Like, that was a huge part of the case, was her claiming to be so close with me and hearing me say that. So Lori takes that new piece of information, along with the fact that at trial, there was an expert who had testified that said Fred's off-duty weapon was very dusty and had obviously not been used or fired in quite some time when the police took it into evidence, and that it couldn't possibly have been the murder weapon. And she basically says the jury ignored that evidence because of her friend's testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So saying like, this is bullshit, so we should get a new trial. She submits two separate appeals to have her conviction just straight up overturned.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an officer of the court. But
I've been watching Scandal.
Yeah, you know,
you
I'm just...
You wanna know why?
I know why.
Because we met somebody who's just like Olivia
Pope. Oh my gosh. So chic. She did give us a 5-star rating on the podcast.
Well, she asked about the podcast. Melissa's like, you know, while we're here, we'll just go ahead and push 5 stars.
Well, she's like, well, how do I like listen to it? She'd never listened to a podcast before. So I like found it on her podcast app on her iPhone. And I was like, while I'm in here, I'm just going to give us a quick 5-star rating. But I told her, I was like, I'll leave the written review for you though. Like that should be your like personal feeling. But yeah, so guys, leave us those 5-star reviews and comments, please. Thank you so much. Either way, my thing that I was going into was I'm curious about submitting your appeal for an overturned conviction versus for a new trial.
Mm.
I don't know what the difference was there, why they didn't do the other one, but both appeals fail. They're both denied. Yeah. The years start to go by, and after, I think, about 8 years, like almost a full decade in prison, she meets somebody who changes everything.
Ooh.
A woman that Lori was serving time with, I don't think it was her cellmate, I think it was just someone on her probably cell block, had a brother coming to visit her. And Lori sees him in the visitor's room, and she's like, excuse me, who is that tall drink of water? So she approaches this girl, and the girl talks to her brother, No, I said, like, Lori approaches her, then I wrote, prison mate? Colleague?
like buddy.
Buddy? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Cellmate.
Who? Yeah, but they, I don't know if they shared a cell. They weren't, like, cellies.
Blockmate.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. She goes up to this chick, and she's like, yo, who's your brother? What's he all about? The girl talks with her brother, and then tells Lori, yeah, he'd like to write you a letter. So he sees Lori. Remember,
I do not believe this type of stuff.
I know. But remember, she was one of the most famous, like, faces in public, like, pop culture, in the news and things.
That's how I am right now, and nobody's writing me letters.
Well, this man's name was Dominic Gugliotto. And Dominic becomes infatuated with Lori. And they start their relationship. He asks her point blank, like, are you guilty? I need to know before we, like, fall any more in love. Like, I need to know what this about you.
You're here for life, but are you guilty?
Exactly. And she tells Dominic no. And he believes her, flat out. Dominic and Lori, obviously, you know, when they're together, when they're writing, they talk about what life would be like if they could be together on the outside. And they put all of their hope and faith into her third and final appeal.
Yeah.
But that shit got denied.
They're going to live in Vermont. She's going to make a jam. He's going to be the governor.
Oh, I was thinking a little smaller. Like, maybe they'd run, like, an Airbnb.
Oh, that's what they say in Scandal. I've been watching it.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cute. I get it now. Oh, Fritz.
Would have been better if you
could. Oh, I said Fritz, not Fitz. Fritz was my ghost. Just like my boyfriend, who is a ghost, because he does not exist.
He lives in Canada.
He's up in Canada.
Okay.
Okay.
So. She's not guilty, she says.
Yeah, but her final appeal is denied. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're both crushed. Dominic basically says to her, like, what are we going to do? How are we going to get you out of here? Because he just wants to be with her so badly. And Lori comes back with, oh, my God, you'd really help me escape?
Oh, my God, I was about to say he's going to escape her.
Well, then I said, like, points to Lori for hearing what she wants to hear. Yeah, he's sure. Over here. Yeah, he's like, oh, how am I going to live without you? And she's like, so you'll put the nail file in my birthday cake. Cool, sounds good. And because Dominic's in love with her, he's kind of like, okay, I'll help. So they start planning. Dominic gets to work on basically trying to get them documents to live on when they go on the lam. And he starts by procuring birth certificates for each of them that could basically be their starter for a new identity. Eventually, they get everything together and they settle on an escape date of July 15th, 1990. Oh, you were just a wee baby at that point.
Yeah.
Me too.
I was some months old.
Yeah. Lori had noticed in the prison, in the washroom, like where the washers and dryers were. Oh, that's a laundry room. I wrote it down in case anyone needs to know. She noticed that there was a window that stayed open all the time. I'm thinking maybe it was to get some air in there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's steamy in a washroom.
Yeah, so she basically says, like, well, I can get down there anytime if I just tell the guard, like, oh, I'm going to drop off my laundry. They're not going to think twice about it. So as sunset approaches, she heads down to the laundry room. She jumps up on the washing machine and tries to get out through that window. Now, the window itself only opened about 9 inches. Wasn't particularly a big window. So she's a slim girl. Like, she had to really get through there. She gets out the window.
Yeah, but then she's still fenced in and there's guards.
Yeah.
And sometimes dogs.
Yeah, she's still on the prison. And apparently, they made it seem like it was maximum security. But I don't think it was, based off this story.
Yeah, but it was also 1990.
Yeah. As she lands on the ground, she's in the lawn, open lawn. She sprints across the lawn, gets into a wooded area where there's, like, trees and stuff. And then she ends up just sprinting through all the way to the back fence. Like, barbed wire, the whole shebang. The plan was for Dominic to pull up in a very specific color car at a specific time, and then he'd put his brights on so that she'd know it was him, then she'd hop the fence and get right in the car.
Black.
I don't think it would be that. I think it would be something a little less common. I'm thinking yellow.
You think you're going to get into a car and go on the lam in a yellow car?
Well, I don't know.
No, you're going to pick one that blends in.
Blue.
It's most likely black or white.
Okay. We'll do some research. We'll see if we can find it.
Yellow?
Well, I'm just saying.
Just think about yellow.
Well, I'm just saying, how are you going to pick a color car for her to know it's him without her being close enough to see him?
That's why she looks for the lights.
Okay. Well, either way, she sees a car coming. It's got bright lights on. But it's not Dominic, so she stays hidden.
Oh, no.
She's panicking at this point, and she's thinking, like, oh, my God, he blew me off. Like, he is leaving me out to dry. But then she sees him. He puts those brights on. He pulls right up to the fence. Lori takes off, starts to scale the 7-foot chain link fence.
Oh, my God. Do you think there's razor blades on the top?
I think there's barbed wire.
Oh, that's what I mean.
And, yeah, probably a couple butcher knives duct taped at odd angles. No, there's not, like, blades up there.
I know. I was thinking barbed wire.
Well, there was. While she's climbing, she actually tears open one of her legs on the barbed wire. And she manages to make it over the fence and into the car. And they gone. Their plan was to just put a bunch of just married signs on the outside of their car and tie, like, bells and things to it and then head for Canada as if they were going on their honeymoon. Because remember, Wisconsin, just going straight north.
Oh, I know where it is.
Right here.
Yeah.
That's Canada. That's Cheese City. Sorry about cheese. Sorry about up cheese. They've got $10,000 hidden under the front seat.
Wow.
Yeah, and they get in line for customs. When they get up to the front, they tell the customs agent that they're newlyweds, they're here for their honeymoon, but unfortunately they had just been robbed, and her purse had been stolen, and that had their passports and their wallets in it.
I thought they had fake ones.
Well, they didn't have, they couldn't get fake details. They just had the birth certificates.
Yeah.
So then they're like, yeah, all we have left is our birth certificates. Like, we hope that's okay. Like, we brought them with us. And the custom agent looks it over and he's like, well, how long are you going to be here? And they're like, oh, just 2 weeks. We're going on a little road trip. And he's like, all right, well, welcome to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then that made me think of Andy loving that commercial of the beaver welcoming people to Canada. Who's like, welcome to Canada. Beyond the new Canada.
See?
It was such a good impression.
That was really good.
Thank you. They drive into Canada. They lose their shit. They've done it. They pull off the road barely a mile or two into the country. And as Dominic puts it, they had a little celebration.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. I watched an interview with him. And she's like, uh-huh. And he's like, yeah. Like, you can just see. It's, like, very awkward. So but
creepy.
Yeah, he felt the need to say that. So... They drive to a small town called Thunder Bay.
Oh my god, I've been there.
Have you really?
No, I've never been to Canada.
Oh, I was confused. It's in Ontario.
Yeah. Been to Ontario, California.
Oh, I was like, you just said you've never been to Canada. I see. Well,
so have you.
Oh.
You picked me there.
Oh,
you
picked me up there. I picked you there.
You picked me
out
there.
Out of all the cousins. They try to blend in. They decide to start a life. And back home, Lori's escape basically shot her right back up into the tabloids and media.
100.
As if she had never left. Because they're like, Playboy Bunny escapes? What?
She just hopped right over that fence.
Oh, excellent hop pun.
Yeah.
Now, again, when she had gone to prison in the first place, the public was very divided on if she was guilty or not. Now that she's escaped, half of the public again is like, all right, you go, girl. Get your freedom on. You shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The press dubs her Bambi, I guess, for being on the run.
No, I think it's because she's pretty.
Yeah, also maybe she hopped the fence. I don't really know. But they call
I don't think it's because she hopped the fence.
Dude, I don't know.
Bambi, they like call any girl that they think is pretty Bambi. Because baby deers are so cute. And they have big eyes and eyelashes. And if you see one in the wild, you need to just leave it. Its mom will come back and find it.
You're supposed to wait for 24 hours. If the mom doesn't come back at that point, you can intervene.
Same with kittens.
It's
kitten season.
Did you know that...
Don't kidnap them.
Oh, that's funny.
That's what they say on the news all the time.
Did you know that baby deer, when they're born, don't have a scent for the first like week or a couple of days of their life? So that predators can't smell them.
That's why they're hidden.
Yeah, they just know to stay hidden in the grass till their mom comes back. Bananas.
Yeah, Mother Nature's cray cray.
Yeah. Okay, so she's Bambi because of her leaping ability. We've been through it. We agree. That's great. That's good. People start making like bright pink bumper stickers with the phrase "Run Bambi, Run" on them.
So they're like telling her good job for escaping.
Oh, half of the people get t-shirts, they get bumper stickers. People are all about it. People started signing petitions to have her conviction overturned while she's gone. Like, people start feeling really strongly about this. On the bumper stickers, it's a picture of the cartoon deer, but it's like wearing jail stripes and has like a chain on its leg and says "Run Bambi, Run." People just, they love it. She's a vigilante to them, and they called her, like, the queen of convicts or the queen of running or something. I don't know. They had some name for her.
I would never want to be a queen of running.
Ever. People just think she's a hero. The other half of the people are like, fuck this. She needs to be caught right away. Yeah. We've got a murderer on the loose.
Get her.
Murderer. After 3 months of living quietly in Canada, Lori's escape was featured on none other than America's Most Wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, someone saw something and, like, recognized her, thought something was interesting, because very quickly after, Lori was actually approached at work by a police officer in Canada.
Where was she working?
Didn't say.
Okay,
yeah,
sorry,
didn't say. But he asked her, are you Lori Bembenek? And she's like, me? Oh my gosh, no. Like,
no, but they call me Bambi.
Yeah, like, I'm flattered. There's no way. Ha ha. And the cop's like, okay, well, can I see your ID? And she's like, of course, officer, here you go. And she shows him her ID and he's like, oh, well, great. I'll tell him they got the wrong girl. And he leaves. She's like, we gotta go. She calls Dominic right away. She's like, hey, jig's up. They're onto us. We gotta go. She hustles out the back. I think she literally, it was the kind of escape where she, like, leaves through the back door, like, pulls her, like, coat up around her face, like
something. Like a TV.
Yeah, like a TV exit. Mm-hmm. Dominic picks her up right away. They go back to their house. They start packing. They're
just have dough bags.
Yeah, they're just throwing everything in the bag. Before they can finish, though, the Royal Mounted Canadian Police
come up on their mooses.
Yeah, they ride right up on the mooses, right into the backyard, take them into custody.
Do you think they're riding? They don't ride mooses.
I was joking, Sarah.
I know, but me too. But do you think maybe horses?
Yeah, that's what they're mounted on.
That's what I thought.
What else did you think
they were? Clydesdales. Like, I think they would be on a Clydesdale.
Did you say Clydesdale?
Yeah, it's a Clydesdale.
Clydesdale.
No.
Clydesdale.
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 Like the Budweiser ones?
Yes. Clyde.
Anheuser-Busch.
With a D.
Clydesdales? Like the name Clyde?
Yeah. You're saying Clydesdales?
Yeah, because of their feet. I don't know.
Frog protection.
It's really Clydesdales?
Yeah.
Stales?
Yeah.
Clydesdales.
No. Clyde. Mm. Clydesdale. Like Clydesdale.
None of this sounds correct.
You just said Clydesdale.
Clydesdales.
Clyde.
Clydesdales.
Try to say Cly. Dale.
So it's
Clydesdale.
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 Who do you think is still listening?
I think it's Clydesdales anyway. Okay. I've seen him at Shamu, Dolly the Dolphin.
SeaWorld?
Just there. Yeah, SeaWorld. They have him there.
You saw them at SeaWorld?
No. It's very seriously SeaWorld.
Got it. Okay.
Rude.
So back to the moose. Mm-hmm. The Mounties come up, take him into custody. As soon as news breaks that Lori Bambi Bembenek was captured, American press descends to Canada into the little town of Thunder Bay. Canadian police are essentially shocked. They have no idea why there's so much press there. And at one point, Dominic said, like, he basically had to tell them, like, you guys don't understand. You just captured one of the most famous fugitives in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, they truly had no idea.
Dominic is saying this about his wife?
His, I think, girlfriend. Oh. Yeah, Dominic got captured with her. Like, they take them both into custody. And I guess one of the cops was saying to him, like, why do people care so much?
Oh, okay.
And he had to be like, you don't know this, but this is a big deal because of all the press she had been getting. Once they were caught, Dominic actually was charged with aiding and abetting a fugitive. And he ends up getting sentenced to 1 year in prison. Which I thought was low.
I was going to say, that's all?
That's what I thought, but that obviously is, like, the end of their relationship.
But if I'm going to aid and abet the love of my life, I would hope I'd only get 1 year, too.
Yeah, for sure.
But also, the love of my life is not going to be...
behind bars?
A murderer.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting because I saw an interview with Dominic where he was like, yeah, I blamed her for, like, a lot of it. Like, mm-hmm. I was angry at her. It made me realize how much I had given up for her. And then, but then he's like, but now he goes, I don't blame her anymore. Like, I made my own decisions. I was in love with her. But so he's like, later on, I had to realize, like, I'm responsible for my own actions. And, but he's like, but needless to say, like, that was the end of our relationship.
Yeah.
Then at that point, Lori has a decision to make. She either requests to have refugee status and stay in Canada and go through their system, or she returns to Milwaukee to fight for her freedom. While she had been gone in those 3 months, a case had actually been started looking into the conduct of her trial. And Lori ends up deciding to go back and hopes that she gets a new trial after this case basically finishes up. A judge looks over all the facts of the case. In the end, he does rule that there were significant mistakes made during the trial, from the police, their investigation, the way they handled the evidence, all the way up to the botched testimony on forensics and the witness statements that the prosecution said the first time, which had since been overturned. During the case, evidence had come out showing that multiple forensic investigators had found discrepancies between Fred Schultz's off-duty weapon and the murder weapon. And one of them alone was like, yeah, the muzzle shape of his gun, like, literally doesn't match the muzzle shape found on the victim's body.
So weird.
Yeah, so they're kind of like, yeah, this isn't it. The state decides to, like, weigh the cost of a new trial, as well as the fact that their forensic and witness testimony, which is what got her the first time, is basically called into question and gone to shit. they decide to offer Lori a deal. They tell her that if she pleads guilty to the lesser charge of second-degree murder, they'll release her from prison with time served.
Oh.
Or she can risk another life sentence with a new trial.
Yeah, because she has to be confident enough that she can fight it.
Exactly. And at this, Lori's torn because she's like, they're going to let me out of jail tomorrow, but that means I never get to clear my name. Yeah. I basically tell people I did it, even though she maintains that she didn't.
Yeah, you can't go out and be like, well, then I just took a deal, but I'm still really innocent.
Really, though, in the end, she chooses the deal to get out of jail, and she pleads guilty to second-degree murder, and part of that deal is that she can never challenge the murder ever again. In the court system, in the, press, nothing.
Wowza.
Yeah. In December of 1992, 10 years after her original conviction, and 2 years after she had been recaptured, Lori Bambi Bembenik is released from prison.
That's crazy.
Naturally, the amount of press is insane. She basically goes on a press tour to talk about what happened, the escape, like, all these things. And when people ask, like, but you pleaded guilty, you've admitted to it, her phrasing is she just keeps saying, I did what I did. As far as accepting the plea deal, she says it's because her parents were very old and she didn't want to spend, like, basically their last years litigating and fighting through another trial.
Yeah.
Because, again, it had already been 2 years since she had been recaptured before she even gets out. And I guess her dad had said, like, I just wanted to see you free, like, mm-hmm. while I was still here. So she feels really good about giving that gift to her parents. And while she couldn't publicly claim to be innocent, she was still determined to clear her name. As the 90s continue on, DNA becomes more of a thing.
Uh-oh.
Lori voluntarily gives her DNA to forensic labs to test against the DNA that they're now finding at the murder scene.
Ooh.
Tests and tests come back, they keep running them, and it basically shows zero signs of Lori's DNA anywhere at the crime scene.
That's crazy.
DNA tests do show, though, an unknown male DNA sample at the crime scene, as well as DNA evidence from a male on the sexual assault of Christine Schultz. So they think she was assaulted before mm-hmm. she was murdered, and now they have proof that it was an unknown male in the room, just like her sons had said they saw.
Yeah.
That obviously was, like, huge for Lori because she appears to be innocent now at this point. Like, they're starting to scientifically be like, yeah, she really wasn't there. But again, she keeps picking at the evidence of the case. As ballistic testing improves, they eventually also were able to conclusively prove that Fred's off-duty weapon was not the murder weapon. They had basically just wanted to make the case and found someone who said it was.
Well, and they were against her to begin with.
Yeah. Even though Lori had agreed to never contest the guilty plea, in the end, she decides to fight to have her conviction overturned. And in 2008, she brings a case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Dang.
Yeah. The appeal was denied. They chose not to move forward with that. As of today, her conviction still stands. The detectives in the case still say that they're 100% convinced Lori was behind it and she was guilty of the murder. And they also have said that they've never heard from any jury member saying that they've changed their minds, even after all this time. Lori kept at it, though, and even as her own health started to deteriorate, she requested a pardon from the then governor of Wisconsin, a man named Jim Doyle. And Governor Doyle's office never gave, like, a public update on the request. And then on November 20th, 2010, Lori Bembenik actually died from liver failure.
Yikes.
Lori's attorneys have continued to fight for her. They believe that her death shouldn't stand in the way of her name being cleared. And in 2019, they sent a new pardon request to the current Wisconsin governor. His name is Tony Evers. His office also hasn't issued a ruling, and he's declined to comment on any specific pardon requests. The case obviously was, like, perfect for books and made for TV movies, and it's just gone kind of viral in that sense. Multiple have been made. Mostly the title is Run, Bambi, Run. And there's actually also a podcast on Apple Podcasts titled the same thing. It's called Run, Bambi, Run. And it's about 8 episodes. It's dedicated to the in-depth information on Lori Bembenek and the details of the case. The podcast features interviews with Lori's close friend and Lori's biographer, Chris Radish, who is the author of the book called Run, Bambi, Run.
Wow.
And lastly, something odd that I read in my research, but it didn't fit anywhere in the story. I guess in 2002, after Lori had completed her parole, she was staying in a hotel, I think somewhere in like LA, before a scheduled appearance on the Dr. Phil show. And I guess the show had agreed to pay for some of the DNA testing that she was requesting to try and prove her innocence. And I guess there were some restrictions about her having to stay in her hotel room, like, before the interview, and it caused her to have kind of, like, a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it, like, triggered memories of jail, like, having to be there. So
yeah.
She tried to escape out of the hotel window.
Oh, my God.
In doing so, she, like, fucked up her foot really badly. And a few weeks later, the injuries were so bad, they had to amputate her foot.
Ma'am, how does that happen?
No idea. That's the end of my story. Like, that fit nowhere in the whole story, but I just thought it was so ridiculous I could not tell you.
That is so odd.
And that is the crazy, still unchanged case of Lori Bembenek, or Lori Bambi Bembenek, technically convicted murderer.
Crazy.
Yeah, here's a couple of pictures. I got a lot. This first one is Christine Schultz. This was Fred's first wife. I think she would have been played by Amy Winehouse.
Oh, I could see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very 80s, very 70s, 80s. This is a picture of Lori in court. She I looks see. Like a model.
Yeah.
This is kind of why people were so obsessed with her.
I get it now.
Very chic. She totally could be a Playboy bunny.
Yeah.
This is another photo of her testifying, actually holding the gun on the stand that they said was the weapon.
Ugh.
Terrible blouse, but she kind of looks like a young Princess Di, I think.
I could see that.
This lady is a freaking chameleon. Every one of these pictures, I personally think you could believe was a different person.
Yeah.
This was her, I think when they were living in Canada, this was her with that Dominic guy who she escaped with.
Looks completely different there.
Totally different.
I mean, I know their hair is different colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was her when she was actually arrested in Canada, taken back into custody.
Oh.
That's a serious perm.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I like that jacket.
If I went on the run, I'd have to perm my hair and it wouldn't be good.
Just go somewhere humid.
Okay, this photo. At some point in 1996, she had a mullet.
Yeah. She's beautiful, though.
Gorgeous. Like, she looks like Twiggy. She literally looks like she could be on America's Next Top Model.
Pretending her hair's not long in the back.
Right. Like, if it's just a friggin' pixie cut,
yeah,
gorge.
Beautiful.
But you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. And then this is her on her, like, press tour upon being released from prison. Tell me who you think she looks like.
Okay. Winona Ryder.
Oh, I was thinking Kris Jenner.
Oh, she does look like Kris Jenner.
Kris Jenner could play her right there.
100%.
This woman's a chameleon. So that's it. That's my story on Lori Bambi Bembenek. There's another podcast out there on Apple called Run Bambi Run. I think it's going to have more interviews and more information about it. But you guys are feel free to, you guys are welcome to check that out if you want more info.
That's crazy.
That's my story.
Very cool.
Thank you.
I never heard that one.
Me either. I want to ask my mom if she, like, remembers it. Because apparently,
yeah.
I want to ask your mom, too. Like, apparently it was all the news back
all
then.
All the rage.
Yeah.
Well, excellent job.
Okay. Time out. Okay. Time in.
Thank you guys for pausing. Melissa and I had to go do a lamp deal.
Drug deal.
Nope. Lamp. I was selling a lamp. So Melissa had to be my muscle. Gross. So gross. No. Okay. I'm not going to tell you, don't look, the title of my case today.
Okay.
My story.
I didn't tell you mine either.
You didn't.
Mm-mm. I'm sneaky.
Sometimes you just like to live like on the crazy side.
Exactly.
So just for you guys don't know, Melissa is usually able to sit absolutely still when she tells her story. And the moment I start talking, all of a sudden her back hurts and she's got to start moving around.
Yeah, that's how everybody, every human in the world goes.
I sit perfectly still when you're telling me the story.
You literally are just on your phone the entire time.
Today I was because I was waiting to talk to my dealer. My lamp dealer.
Your customer.
Just kidding. All right. So our story is going to take rewind. Our story is taking place in a suburb called Coogee, which is a suburb outside of Sydney, Australia.
Ah, good eye, mate.
That was actually really good.
I listened to a lot of the Tony and Ryan podcast.
Oh, I saw something today from theirs about a bar of soap.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Because I am Tony 1000%. Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I was like.
Yeah. And I'm Ryan.
Yeah.
Didn't know I'm that. I'm a lather and then lather.
Yeah.
Yeah. So near Sydney, Australia, and it is going to be taking place in April 1935.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very sketchy time in the world.
Why?
World War II's on the horizon, or it's, like, happening. I think it started in 38,
maybe? Does Australia have anything to do with it?
Well, I mean, it's the World War.
Like, oh, everybody had something to do with it.
I mean, everyone, I bet you, was, like, very nervous about what was going on in the world.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Now, a man named Bert Hobson was out fishing, and he actually caught a tiger shark.
The fuck?
Yes.
What do you use for bait?
I don't know. And it was only about 2 miles from, like, the beach area. Like, he was fishing.
Yeah.
And now he caught the tiger shark. It was him and his son. And Bert and his family owned, like, this thing called the Coogee Aquarium and Swimming Baths. And they decided to keep the shark alive and bring it to their aquarium to put in a tank.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that decision.
Yeah. The tiger shark was 14 feet.
Fudge.
And weighed apparently a ton. How much is a ton?
2,000 pounds.
Thank you. And just to go back a little bit on this, sharks were, like, not getting a good name during that time. And I kind of talk about this a little bit later, but there had been, like, many shark attacks within the coast. So not a lot of people were going to this area anymore because people were starting to become afraid of sharks. Mm-hmm. So his business was then going down. It also seemed like there was some sort of, like, pier action in this area and something there got shut down.
What? It's like a pier scene happening somewhere.
Like a arcade or something, and that shut down. So the Hobson family weren't making the money that they hoped during the spring and summer.
Yeah.
Or, well, it would be coming the summer for them. No, it would be coming the winter for them.
When was this?
April.
Oh, yeah, that's their fall.
Like, so they didn't make enough money during the summer. So they thought, wow, let's bring in this shark. Everybody's afraid of them. They might want to see one up close and personal.
Disappointed in that decision.
Yeah, but I do like to see sharks up close and personal.
Yeah, but it's... But now, maybe not back then, but now we have advanced technology. You should be able to just throw up a hologram of that bad boy.
And or really... have one that's born in an aquarium.
No. No.
It doesn't know any different.
The only animals that should be in aquariums are animals that are rescued and cannot survive at sea by themselves. They should not be bred.
Like that three-flipper sea turtle?
Sure.
There's one here.
Yeah, if you can't make it.
Live here. That's what they tell him. Okay. Now,
but they don't know any different.
They don't. So.
Terrible.
It's okay. So people actually started coming. They got a big turnout, but the tiger shark started to lose a lot of its energy. He wasn't eating, or she wasn't eating. I'm not sure. It didn't have a name. But obviously, it started getting super bummed.
Yeah, lethargic.
It had a morbid or whatever it's called.
It had a case of the morbs.
It had a case of the morbs to the point where it started kind of hitting the walls.
Yeah. They go insane.
Well, it almost looked like he couldn't swim. So it looked like he was drunk. Aww. And when a huge group of people were out there watching him, the shark kind of started to convulse. And apparently, it threw up.
Oh.
Yeah. It threw up, like, a dead rat. It threw up, like, fish, obviously. It threw up, like, parts of another, like, shark. It said that the tiger shark ate a smaller shark. Mm-hmm. And then, as the water started to clean out, a human arm was found.
Yeah.
Did you know that was coming?
I think I did.
I wish you would have lied. Now, that's the thing where it kind of came. Nobody was really super alarmed because there had been all those shark attacks. And this was a big shark.
Yeah.
So they were just kind of like, huh. But they didn't get too nervous. But then as they got the arm out, they found that it had a pretty distinct tattoo on its arm, on the forearm. And it was actually two boxers, like fighting boxers, facing each other, ready to fight.
Oof.
Now, authorities were called in and they were able to lift prints from this arm or from the hands.
Whoa.
Because it had only been partially digested.
Uh-huh.
Also, I forgot to tell you the big point. The reason why the authorities were called in was because it was a clean, severed arm. Mm-hmm. It was not jagged as if a
shark had like ripped it off.
Yeah. Thank you for telling my story. No, believe it. This is what it is.
I'm sorry.
This was another reason I got a little bit mad at Melissa on the trippity trip. And by mad, I mean yelled at her for 3.2 seconds and then was done. And what you guys don't know is Melissa was making hand movements as I was talking about the arm being severed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, so the authorities came and there was the distinctive tattoo. And then they were able to lift prints from the fingers. And they were able to identify the arm as belonging to a former boxer and also a small-time criminal named James Jimmy Smith.
Ooh.
Yeah. Did you know that James is a nickname for Jimmy? I mean, Jimmy is a nickname for James.
I did know that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know?
I have an Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah. Now, Jimmy Smith had been missing since April 7th, he had lived in what the internet called he had lived what the internet called a high risk lifestyle.
Mm.
And he, like I said, he was a small time criminal, but also he had become a police informant.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Snitchy.
Now, like we said, because the arm had been severed with what they would guess as a knife or something like that, rather than a shark bite, this started a murder investigation. 3 days into the investigation, the aquarium owners or workers decided to kill the tiger shark. I'm not sure why. And they actually gutted it.
So, they're fucking monsters.
Yeah. So it basically ruined any and all other part of investigation into the shark.
Mm-hmm.
Like probably investigators were probably going to kill it and gut it to see if the rest of his body was in there. But it wasn't.
I'd like to think we would have started with, like, an MRI.
I don't think they had those in 1935. Do you think they did?
I'd like to think they had something.
Yeah.
Some maybe. Kind of scan.
But probably not for veterinary stuff. Probably for humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in looking into Jimmy Smith, they also found that he had a lot to do with another gentleman in his area and who was a businessman, and his name was Reginald William Lloyd Holmes. Just going to call him Holmes.
It's a serious name.
Exactly. Now, Holmes ran a successful family boating business. His family had ran it forever, and it was in Lavender Bay, New South Wales. But he also used this boating business as a front for, like, illegal stuff, like transporting drugs. He also did, like, forgery. He also was, like, really big into insurance scams.
Mm.
So he was well-known, but he was also well-known for kind of having all these side jobs.
Yeah.
Now, Jimmy Smith had worked with Holmes on the shady side of his business, as well as another man named Patrick Brady. One of Holmes's biggest cons was that he actually had Jimmy Smith go and sink an overinsured yacht named the Pathfinder so that he could file the claims and get back all that money. But apparently, because Holmes was a police informant, he told them that it was suspicious, and Holmes ended up having to, quote, eat the cost of the boat.
Ooh.
Which then started problems between Holmes and Jimmy.
Mm, got it.
Got it. Then apparently these issues between the two only got worse when Jimmy started to blackmail Holmes. Probably because he had worked for him for so long and he was like,
yeah,
guess what, buddy?
Give me your money.
Yeah.
Or else.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to my police friends. He probably didn't tell him that. But
you're going to say, I'm going to call your mom.
I'm going to call your mom and your sister. Because you don't want to mess with that, you know?
Yeah.
Now, on April 7th, which was the last day that Jimmy had been seen, he had told his wife that he was going to go fishing. He went later that day to drink and play cards with Patrick Brady, that other convict who was his close friend. And they had gone to a place called the Cecil Hotel in Cronulla, which was also a suburb of Sydney. C-R-O-N-U-L-L-A.
Sure.
I don't know how you would say it if you had an accent.
You're the one that lived there.
I did?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what you said. You lived in Australia.
Oh, I did live in Australia for 3 weeks, but I lived in the Gold Coast, not Sydney. There's a different place. Pacific.
Perth?
Nope.
Perth?
That's a whole other place. There was a Surfer's Paradise. That's where I spent some time.
Mm.
Yep. Okay. Now, just to recap kind of what I've told you, because it's been a little bit sporadic. Have you agreed?
I think I'm with you, but yeah. Sure, I love a recap.
So the police obviously found out that the arm was Jimmy Smith's. They knew he had been in cahoots with Reginald Holmes. Their business partnership had gone down the drain, and that gave the police the two suspects, which was Holmes and then the other gentleman, Brady, that he had been with the day he disappeared. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
Okay, so here's the thing. The police knew all that, but they had no evidence. They had nothing to kind of get the case going other than this arm. They had no other parts of the body. They just struggled. So they looked to the Navy and the Air Force to search the surrounding areas of Port Hacking and Gunnamatta Bay. G-U-N-N-A-M-A-T-T-A. Gunnamatta.
You think that's what it is? I'd like you to stick with Gunnamatta.
There's two T's. Matata. So they were searching for Jimmy's body, but they never found it. They didn't have enough evidence to arrest either one of the suspects, so it kind of just went cold. But they knew those were the only two men that probably had something to do with it. Well, because both Holmes and Brady were convicts and con men. What did you call them?
Confidence men. Yeah. Which I did look that up. That is where the word con man comes from.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Police were actually able to bring in Patrick Brady on a forgery charge. And basically what they did was just while interrogating him for 6 hours, they just started asking him about Jimmy's murder.
Damn.
And finally, after 6 hours, Brady did confess that Holmes was the mastermind behind Jimmy Smith's murder. So the police knew that their next step was that they had to get Holmes, and obviously Holmes knew that Brady had been arrested. I mean, this was a very, like, crime-ridden area.
Right.
So it wasn't like, it seemed like everything went very quickly and people found out different things. And Holmes realized that the police were probably coming to him next. So he grabbed a bottle of booze, he grabbed some keys, he went to the harbor, went on a speedboat.
Whoa.
The police went to his house, realized he wasn't there, and went to the harbor. Now, while he was out on the harbor, Holmes decided to stop his boat in front of a group of people. He was obviously intoxicated, and they were kind of watching him, like, sporadically go, and people kind of knew the police had started to show up, that there was something going on. He stood up on his boat, and he said, quote, Jimmy Smith is dead, and there's only one other left. If you leave me until tonight, I will finish him. But then he took a gun to his head and shot himself.
Oh, wait, was he the one that was left?
No, I think it's Patrick Brady.
Whoa.
But maybe. But the thing was, I'm sorry to be laughing. Thing was is that he put the gun barrel to his forehead, so his bone stopped the bullet, and it just stunned him.
Oh, so, my God.
Within, like, moments, he was climbing back up on his boat, like, not even really injured, like, just, like, broken skin and,
dude,
like, sidetracked, but, like, it was a flesh wound, basically.
Serious brow ridge.
Seriously.
Imagine thinking you're about to kill yourself and it not working, and then you being like, well, I guess I'll keep on keeping on.
It literally said the bullet flattened against his bone and he was stunned.
Shit.
Exactly. So he got himself up on the boat. And then just, like, sped away from the police for, like, hours within the harbor until they finally apprehended him.
That's hilarious.
So, after he had been apprehended, of course, he still wasn't going to convince. Why do I keep saying convince? He wasn't going to confess.
You know what? He might have been trying to convince people of a lot of things.
Well, you're actually correct, because during that interrogation...
During
the interrogation... He said he was a victim of Jimmy Smith's blackmail, and that Patrick Brady had acted completely alone in Jimmy's murder.
Oh, well, that's convenient that he knows the truth.
Exactly, but Ooh. You just tried to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And then went speedboating.
And then went boating.
Yeah. I really like a speedboat, I think.
Yeah.
I think because you can't feel the waves as much.
Interesting.
But maybe you feel them too much.
Yeah, maybe.
You know? But I like to think I like a speedboat.
I think I'm good on, like, a pontoon. Nice hat on. Wind on my bod.
Yeah. I'm not good on a scuba diving boat.
Never been on one of those.
I think it's just a regular size boat that they take people scuba diving.
I think it's just a ruggy.
Exactly. All right. So, where am I? Holmes told the police that Brady had rented a small cottage that same night that he and Jimmy had been playing cards, and that that is where he murdered Jimmy Smith. Then, following the murder, he dumped the body into the ocean, which at this time was called a Sydney send-off in the mafia situation.
Excuse me.
But Brady decided to hold on to the arm as a threat to Holmes. Now, remember, Brady is saying, Holmes told me to do this.
Yeah.
So I think what he's trying to say is like, oh, he came to try to threaten me with it. But probably what Brady said is like, hey, look, it happened.
Yeah. Well, and for him to keep the one that had his tattoo on it. Yeah. So it's like 100% his arm.
And I also read this thing, and it was only in one article that I read, so I wasn't super sure. But apparently, as the news was talking about how they found this arm... and showed the distinctive tattoo, Jimmy's brother had that same tattoo on his arm and, like, called and was, like, identified the arm.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. But I think that's a pretty cool story, so I'll just throw that in there verbally.
Sure.
All right. So, Sydney send-off. All right. Then, after he threw the body into the ocean, Brady then... took a cab to Holmes's house, where he then used the arm to threaten Holmes into a big payment.
Oof.
Now, remember, this is all in the perspective of what Holmes is telling the police.
Yeah.
Holmes then told the police that he worried about having Jimmy's arm. So he threw it into the ocean as well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, on May 16th, Patrick Brady was arrested and charged with the murder of Jim Smith. The prosecution had the taxi driver that identified and testified that he took Brady from that cottage to the Holmes house.
Mm.
He said that the man was very disheveled. He had his hand in a pocket. He wouldn't take it out. So I'm like, did he like have a jacket and like the hand in there?
Yeah, maybe.
His hand?
I mean, it's the 30s. They had a lot of pockets and things in their
trench coats.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Eek.
And it was very clear that the gentleman was frightened. On June 12th, Holmes... Okay, and this too, I forgot. I did a lot of this in my brain. You know how that happens?
Mm-hmm.
Holmes was at... The police, like, believed him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was their key witness. So on June 12th, Holmes was scheduled to attend court, basically to testify against Brady.
Okay.
And he didn't show up. Surprise, surprise. Now, police learned that the night before, on June 11th, Holmes had taken 500 L's. What's the pound money over there? Pounds?
In Australia?
Yeah, there was. It looked like European.
Oh, it had like the L with the thing? Yeah, that means pounds.
Yeah, 500 pounds from his account. He also told his wife that he was going to go meet with somebody. But early the next morning, Holmes was found dead in his car in a place called Hickerson Road.
Hmm.
He had been shot 3 times at a close range, and the crime scene was made to look as if he had committed suicide, but police believe he was murdered. Holmes's death did not stop Brady's court proceedings, although he was their star witness. Brady's lawyer argued that the coroner doesn't have enough information or evidence that Jim Smith was even dead, because you can live without an arm.
Yeah, that's
fair.
They
didn't have any other part of his body. And in the end, Brady was ultimately acquitted. He maintained that he was not connected to Jim Smith's murder until his death on April 18th, 1965, at the age of 76. And the murder of Jimmy Smith has still remained unsolved, and the rest of his body has never been recovered.
Yikes.
And that is my story of the shark arm case.
Yeah.
See why I couldn't tell you?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It would have given a lot away up front.
Yeah. I decided to pick this one because we went to the bay.
Yeah.
And the night before we went to the bay, I saw this shark watcher guy on TikTok who said that they had just seen a shark by mission.
And you wanted me to go in that godforsaken water with the eels and the stingrays and the sharks.
There's no eels, but there were stingrays.
Just saying.
But I think it was out by the ocean part.
I don't go in the water in California.
Yeah.
It's just not for me.
Well, it's great white season.
Yeah, that's true.
So, that's why I did this one.
Dang.
Pretty crazy, right?
That is pretty crazy.
Oh, pictures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you have a picture of the shark?
Kind of, sort of. This is the beach. See what I'm saying? A pier action. It was busy, but they weren't getting this many people. This was Jimmy Smith.
Sad.
Mm-hmm. This was Patrick Brady, the man who...
It's very old.
Supposedly murdered him. Here is Holmes, Reginald Holmes. I see why they would believe him.
Yeah.
And he was like a businessman in the thing. City. Here apparently is the shark swimming in its tank. Aww. But it almost just looks like a pool.
It probably was just a pool.
And then here was the arm. And if you look super close, you can see there's, like, the tattoo is right there.
Yeah.
At least I think.
Yikes.
And then that was the only pictures I had of the shark. Mm. So that's the shark arm case of Australia.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Thought it was beachy themed, you know, summer.
Yeah.
I wanted to do bridal theme, but Melissa told me no.
Yeah, you really did. You were like, oh, maybe I'll do a theme about like a bachelorette party when we go on our bachelorette party. And I was like, we could wait till we get back, maybe.
Yeah, but nothing bad happened to us.
Yeah.
I almost peed my pants a few times, but.
From laughing?
Yes. Our friend stuck her hand in a window to try to get some keys. Oh my God.
Speaking of crimes and Airbnbs, guys, So Airbnb has this dumb thing, which I get is for the greater good, but they don't give you the full address of where you're staying until, like, let's say 6 hours before you check in. But for people who don't have service, your app can't update.
Yeah.
So all of us, for some reason, Verizon hates Pacific Beach and none of us had service. So all Leah could see was what she had gotten in the beginning, which basically said, like, look for this street, this house, this color, blah, blah, blah. And basically said, like, the keys, the door's open, keys are on the table. And so we, like, drive around Pacific Beach till we find the street name.
Thank God we had somebody who lived there.
Yeah, and then we pull over and we're like, oh, there's the blue and white house. Oh, there's the number he mentioned. Like, we're good. So Leah hops out and she goes to open the door and it's locked and she's, like, concerned. And then she sees, a window that was cracked open. So in her mind, she thought, like, oh, well, let me just, like, slide this window open and, like, I'll go in and look for the keys. no, it wasn't our Airbnb. And we see her, like, put her hand inside of this window, and essentially she puts her hand on top of this stranger's head. And she, like, pulls her hand back. This guy, like, sits up, like, what the hell's happening? I maintain the weird part was that no one, and it's, like, mind you, 4:30 p.m.
Yeah, it was, like, 5.
Yeah, it, like, wasn't late. There was plenty of light out. It was so random. And in the car, me, Sarah, and Jessica lose our shit. And we start laughing so hard because he was so shocked. But nobody came out. He didn't open the door.
So weird.
He didn't ask.
Yeah.
Like, what, can I help you? So we're thinking, oh my God, this is our Airbnb. And then she's like, well, maybe it's the one next to it that shares a wall. Long story short, we ended up having to be able, we ended up finding, like, the instructions for Wi-Fi at the Airbnb. So we were walking around until we were close enough to connect, and then the rest of the instructions loaded. It was the building behind the building they mentioned in the beginning.
Oh my God.
It was a shit show, and it was so funny. But yeah, Leah essentially kind of assaulted someone. And they, like, were mad, so they, like, couldn't. And then they tried to shut the window, but it was stuck, so they couldn't. Yeah. So they, like, were shoving pillows in it, and, like,
it was, yeah, but nobody turned around and said anything. Like, hi. Yeah. If they would have just said, no, this is our Airbnb, we would have been like, okay, we're so sorry. We're just trying to get it to low.
Well, and it wasn't like Leah was some, like, guy out there who looked, like, you know, scary or, like, unnerving. Like, this is a girl who was drunk. Her glasses and hat were going in opposite directions. We had spent all day at the beach, and so we had had a couple of cocktails. She's, how tall is Leah?
Like, she's not tall.
Maybe 5'7".
Maybe.
Yeah. Like, she's teeny tiny. Like, she's skinny. She's short. Like, you wouldn't look at her and think, oh, I should be afraid right now. Yeah, someone's breaking into this house. And it was so funny.
But, yeah. It was hilarious.
That was one of our better moments.
So.
Guys. 5-star review.
Well, and thank you for letting us have a week off.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you didn't really have an option.
We had lives.
But that's just what has to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 5-star review. Holler at us on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. We're trying to be better on that.
Yeah. Maybe we should go ham this week on the gram.
Yeah. Hamgram.
Hashtag.
All right. Thanks for talking murdy with us.
We'll see you next week.
Adios.